Support for this podcast is brought to you by the Wyoming Humanities. We take a closer look at our human experiences and use stories to explore culture, history, and contemporary issues. You can find us on thinkwhy.org.
You know, I practiced law for almost 20-some years before the idea of being a judge was even in my head.
Hello, I'm Emmy DeGrappa, and this is What's Your Why? Each week, we bring you stories asking our guests the question why. We learn about their passion, why they do what they do, why should we care, and what can we learn? What better place to explore the human landscape than from the state known for its incredible landscapes, Wyoming? And what better organization than Wyoming Humanities? Serving our state for over 45 years, we share stories, ideas, and wisdom about the human experience. Welcome to What's Your Why? Today we are talking to former Wyoming Supreme Court Justice Marilyn Kite. Welcome, Justice Kite.
Thank you.
What an honor to have you here. And what an honor that you were the first woman to serve on the Wyoming Supreme Court. I'm sure you hear that all the time. Even since then, there's only been how many women have followed in your footsteps?
One, but I've only been gone about a year. But it is an honor, and it was a great privilege. It was a wonderful job. It's an important job that all five of the justices have. So I felt very honored to be able to serve for the 15 years I was there.
And what is your hope for women in the future to be able to serve in politics and in government? And especially as the equality state, we don't have a lot of women serving. And why is that?
Ideally, we ought to have half of the public servants be women. They represent half of the population. But it's a combination of factors. Some women don't enter the legal profession. Those that do don't always look at the judiciary as an ultimate goal, at least from the judge's side of things. I can't really speak to the executive or legislative branch, but I definitely would want to see more women serving as judges. And, you know, that's going to take a combined effort of both the lawyers and the women lawyers, as well as the bar itself, to be committed to that. We have about almost 50% of the bar membership are women, and about 7% of the judges are women. So it certainly isn't what it should be, and we've had, you know, what, 120 years to get there. The first, or more than that, 130 years. The first woman judge, Esther Hobart Morris, was a judge in, I think, 1877 or something like 78. And there wasn't another woman judge until the 1980s when Elizabeth Cale was appointed as a district judge in Fremont County. So that's 130 years that we went without another woman judge. So we got a long ways to go.
When you say it's a complicated question, and this is a conversation that I think people have, not just in politics and government, but in women's careers on a whole, that they don't get paid the same as men do, and the idea that they're going to enter at a different time in their life when they're done raising their children. I mean, what is the complication?
First of all, it's an individual choice for every woman to what to do with their her life. It's undeniable that women are the, you know, they're the child bearers, and they are usually the child rearers, although that's changed a lot over the last, you know, several decades. But it's a complicated thing because in order to get to a position where you're qualified to be a judge, you'd have to practice law for a certain amount of time, and that's a demanding profession. It's hard to do with a family, although lots of women do. And in fact, when I chose to apply for the Supreme Court position, my son was 6 years old, and I believed, having researched it and talked to a lot of people that had served in that capacity, that it was probably a better fit for me as a mother. And it was. It was much more manageable schedule than being a practicing lawyer, especially when my husband was also. So once you get into the judiciary, it's a good fit for mothers. But getting the experience that you need to qualify, it's tough. Some women don't make the decision to do it. Lots of times we had openings and had maybe no women applicants, or no women applicants who had the number of years of experience that they needed to qualify. So the field isn't big enough. And so I'm hoping more women will think of it as a goal, a professional goal, and put themselves out there, because we can't select them unless they apply.
Oh, exactly. Well, what was your desire to become a lawyer and practice law?
Well, you know, it's sort of an accidental decision, I think, like a lot of them in life. I had a degree in international affairs and a minor in French, and thought I was going to go to the United Nations until I realized I never didn't want to leave Wyoming. And so then the reality set in as I graduated. What can you do with a bachelor's degree in international relations? It became very obvious to me very quickly that I would need to get additional schooling to get a job that was intellectually challenging. And I kind of stumbled into an interview with a gentleman from an oil company that suggested law school, and I began to think about it more, and it sort of fit. I always had an interest in political science and government and that kind of thing. So I didn't start out saying, by golly, I want to be a lawyer. It just sort of evolved over time. And then, you know, I practiced law for almost 20-some years before the idea of being a judge was even in my head. I did have the chance to serve as a member of our Judicial Nominating Commission. The Wyoming structure for judicial selection is this nominating commission made up of lawyers, three lawyers and three lay people appointed by the governor, and lawyers elected by the bar. And I had another woman lawyer approach me and say, why don't you put your name in for the nominating commission, which I'd given no thought to. And then serving on the nominating commission made me aware of how judges were selected and the kind of applicants that they were getting and applying. And I just made the decision after that it was, you know, possibly something I'd like to do. But really then it was a good friend who was on the Supreme Court, the late Justice Lehman, who was a wonderful man and died way too young, and my brother, who was a district judge in Carbon County, and they both encouraged me to put my name in. And
oh, that's interesting.
It was sort of, still surprises me. I always thought it would be too boring, you know, it'd be too quiet. But it was anything but. You have this vision of people, you know, sitting in a room and going through books all day long, and it certainly was more challenging than that.
So when you're a Supreme Court justice, because that's very interesting when you say it's not boring, it's anything but boring, and what kind of cases are you overseeing, and what is your role? So you have a district court judge, and then the Supreme Court judge is the next level?
That's correct. In Wyoming, some states have an intermediate appellate court, and Wyoming does not. We don't have the caseload that would justify that. You know, our role is not to second-guess the district judges or to reevaluate the facts. It's to find out if there was any legal error made in the court below, and we are the court of last resort, so we can see, we used to kind of joke that we could see anything from dog bites to the death penalty, and almost any kind of case is appealable to the Supreme Court, and maybe 50-60% criminal cases, and the rest were civil cases of in every variety you could imagine, you know, divorce and commercial litigation and administrative agency appeals and that kind of thing, which is one of the things that makes the job interesting, is that every case is different.
Right.
The facts are different. The way you apply the law to the facts changes, and interesting people involved in those cases, and high stakes, important decisions, you know, make your actions were consequential. I mean, they definitely had an impact on the state, on people's lives, so you wanted to get it right. And so the work on the cases was anything but boring. It was very challenging. And then you get to work with great people. I mean, the court has a wonderful staff, and the other four members of the court were good friends, and so the interaction with the staff and the rest of the court is kind of what made it not even close to boring. And then the Supreme Court's responsible for administration of the rest of the courts. And,
right.
And that's a challenging thing when you're Chief Justice, which I was for 4 years. That's a rotating position. Then it's very challenging and very busy.
Oh,
and
okay.
You're out in the state a lot more and
right.
Involved with issues affecting the judiciary.
When does it leave the state and go to the Supreme Court?
Well, there are very few cases that go directly from the state Supreme Court to the U.S. Supreme Court, but if they involve an important question of constitutional law, the U.S. Supreme Court does not have to accept all of it. You go up there on a petition.
Oh, I see.
And if they decide they want to review the case, then they accept the petition. And there was one case during my tenure that went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and, you know, maybe once every 10 years or so, something like that, mm-hmm. the U.S. Supreme Court will take a case from Wyoming. They're taking cases from other states, but they have something like 7,500 applications or petitions a year, and they take 75 cases. So the vast majority don't get reviewed.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell me one of your favorite memories of your work or a case that you worked on that was successful and impactful and maybe still stands in our state.
I'd look at that in two ways. One, in my private practice, I worked with the law firm of Holland and Hart. We did a lot of work for the mineral industry. And I can remember one case in particular where we were representing a mining company in Gillette, trying to keep the coal supply contract that kept that mine going in place, and the power company wanted out of the contract. And when we went to argue that case in front of our state district judge, it was a surprise to us, but the courtroom was absolutely packed, and it was packed with people who worked at the mine, whose jobs were at stake. And so it was a very emotional argument, and it was very obvious the impact of the argument was going to be. And we were successful at that stage, and the case, I think, later settled. But at the end of the court session, the people were, you know, very appreciative and celebrating. And the firm I worked for was Holland and Hart, but it was a large firm with founding people. Steve Hart and Joe Holland were long since deceased. But I had a woman come up to me and put her arms around me and say, "Thank you so much, Mrs. Hart."
Aww.
And, you know, it was not funny, but it was made me smile that there was no Mrs. Hart, but that she cared and admit that much to her. Mm-hmm. Meant a great deal to us. So there were a number of cases like that were significant in my memory. Mm-hmm. The service on the Wyoming Supreme Court, there were so many cases that were important, and I think we hopefully advanced the Wyoming law and jurisprudence on a number of fronts, but the one that probably sticks out the most was the school finance case, which we saw in a number of different times. And the question that was before the court was, Wyoming has a constitutional provision that requires education to be equal and uniform across the state, but schools were funded solely by property tax, which is clearly not uniform across the state.
Right.
And so we had to wrestle with that decision and work with the legislature to change the financing system for school public education, which I think we did. Legislature wasn't terribly happy with us at various stages, but they've done a great job in making the changes that needed to be made to make it a constitutional system. And that's the one that probably jumps out at me most when I think about the 15 years.
Right. Where did you grow up again?
Laramie.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Kindergarten to law school in Laramie, Wyoming.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. You are a Wyoming girl.
Yeah, I am that, for sure.
Well, it's interesting because, do you know Bernadine Kraft?
Yes.
Of course.
Very well.
Because right now she's the only woman in the Senate, right?
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, she's getting ready to retire.
I know.
We're going to miss her so much, but she's on our board.
Oh, great.
And she grew up in Rock Springs. Mm-hmm. Graduated from high school in Rock Springs. And she was just sharing the other night how she tried to leave, and she said she had to go back. Yeah. It was home, and there was just nothing like it.
Well, that's how we used to joke about it being the rubber band theory, that you'd try to leave Wyoming, but you couldn't get out because it would pull you back.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lived, my husband and I have lived in Jackson for about 25 years, 26 years, and are getting ready to make a change, and I think we're going to go back to Laramie, which is a great surprise to me in the thought process, but we want to downsize and be closer to my family still in that corner of the state, and so I think that's what we're going to do. But, you know, Wyoming is a unique place. It just really is. And
truly.
And becomes part of your spirit.
In your blood.
It gets in your blood.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. That was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. I'm Emmy DeGrappa. This Think Why podcast is brought to you by the Wyoming Humanities. We use the humanities as a lens to explore the human experience. You can find us online at thinkwhy.org.